Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Greetings and welcome to this February 12th, 2025 edition of the Healing Sound Show. I am Jonathan Goldman.
And I am Andy Goldman, and we have got a fabulous guest today, the esteemed Dr. Roger Nelson. And I would love to share Roger's bio with everyone. It is quite spectacular. Dr. Roger Nelson is the founder and director of the Global Consciousness Project, an international collaboration studying interactions between human consciousness and physical systems. As an experimental psychologist, he coordinated research at Princeton University, where he developed cutting-edge experiments to study consciousness and mind-matter interactions. In 1997, Dr. Nelson established the Global Consciousness Project, creating a worldwide network of random number generators to monitor effects of globally shared emotions and consciousness. His work bridges traditional scientific methodology with exploration of human consciousness and interconnectedness. His recent book, Connected, The Emergence of Global Consciousness, examines the evidence for a growing global consciousness and its implications for our understanding of human potential and planetary interconnection. And it is our great joy and our great honor today to welcome you, Dr. Roger Nelson, to welcome you back to our Healing Sounds show. Thank you for being with us
today.
Hello,
Roger.
Hello. Thank you very much for what a lovely introduction and what a lovely mission you folks are on. Or we are all on.
We are all on. What a blessing. Right. And we're going to talk more about the Global Consciousness Project, which you, shall we say, initiated on this planet. It's such an important energy form. But before we do that, Dr. Nelson, Roger, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Where are you from? How did you get to doing something as wild and wacky and wonderful as conceiving of the concept of global consciousness? By gosh and by golly, could you tell us that, sir?
Well, I grew up in Nebraska. Sometimes my wife introduces herself as from a foreign country, Germany. And then I say, I'm from a foreign country too, Nebraska. But it was a great place to grow up. I was a curious kid, and libraries were always my friend, and I found, basically, I guess the Global Consciousness Project may have started then, because I started branching out to things like meditation and Tai Chi when I was a teenager, and along the way had the opportunity to take up research on consciousness in a very broad sense, a little bit in the sense of the edges of consciousness, the edges of what we know. We don't know as much as we might like to think about consciousness, and we know even less about what his ultimate capabilities might be, what the limits are, if there are any. So I guess I could go on and describe my whole life course, but it's a kind of an up and down, a sort of normal progression of doing things that are related to what I do now for a time, but often doing things that were quite unrelated or seemingly unrelated. I became, for example, while I was in undergraduate school, much more interested in sculpture than anything else.
Oh my goodness.
I changed from being a physics major student to becoming a psychology student because I had the amazingly unlikely notion that I wouldn't have to study if I were doing psychology. So I already knew this stuff, right? But in any case, I really invested a lot of time, have invested a lot of time in the arts. And it's an investment that pays off because I think we mistake what science can be if we focus only on the numbers, the calculations, the equations, so on. We need more than that. We need the kind of right brain to go with the left brain, and in an integrated way, bring, in other words, a kind of aesthetic quality to science. So that's been one of my, I hesitate to say driving aspects, but in a way it is. I always want to have the full spectrum in front of me when I'm looking at a question in science or maybe also in regular life.
Roger, that is so beautiful to have that balance, because I think so often what happens is that, you know, that scientific information sort of leaves behind the humanness. And I think that you have incorporated that, the humanity with science, so beautifully, because the Global Consciousness Project, I mean, that is cutting edge information for people, and they need that. So thank you.
Wait, but you're jumping ahead, my dear. Before we get into Global Consciousness, let me ask you, I have my notes here that you obviously were involved at Princeton University, but before that you taught in Vermont?
Yes, in a small college in northern Vermont called Johnson State College. I went there partly because I didn't want to go to Bakersfield, California, or to, I can't remember the name of it, a city in North Australia, which were places that had jobs for me when I finished graduate school. And when I went to Vermont to interview there for this job, I thought, oh my goodness, what a wonderful place this is. It's beautiful. It's like Colorado, or it's like Europe, in which I was familiar with because that's where my wife is from and where I spent many, many very wonderful years. In any case, I did wind up teaching there for about 8 years, and it was lovely, wonderful. We made many friends, and we still have those friends now, more than 50 years later. It's like community never goes away. Once you belong to a, it's like belonging to a family. Your family doesn't go away, even if you do.
We stay connected.
Yeah, we stay connected.
A real treasure of life, in my humble opinion.
And that connected is, of course, the name of your book on the emergence of a global consciousness. But first, let me ask, how did you get to Princeton? I know travel, going south probably, but...
Well, yes, it was somewhat south. I became restive because this in the mid-70s, folks may remember the economy wasn't great. There was a lot of inflation, and places like my college were cash strapped, and they were beginning to think, how can we deal? And what they decided to do was focus on a few career opportunities, teach people to get jobs in that career. And my estimation of what would happen is that all the jobs for which they had begun to prepare 4 years earlier would be taken by the time they got there. In any case, I like the idea of a broad spectrum liberal arts education. That's where I wanted to be. And I also was very much interested still in research, which I left when I was in, except for student projects, which, by the way, often focused on things like psychic research, because that was of interest to the students who were in my experimental psychology class. Anyway, a friend handed me a newspaper, a Chronicle of Higher Education, had a bunch of jobs circled adjacent. One of those he had circled was the one in Princeton, where they were looking for a cognitive scientist interested in lesser-known aspects of perception. And I thought, well, that sounds interesting. Maybe the sense of smell or touch or something. But it wasn't. It was what people sometimes call the sixth sense. They wanted to find out whether human consciousness could extend out and touch the world and make it different from what it would otherwise have been without that human consciousness. And that was, so I went to Princeton and talked to the people, Bob, John, and Brenda Dunn, who were just setting up the lab. And I liked them both. They liked me. So we got together and formed a kind of onward marching scientific aesthetic group, which became a little bigger over the years, but really was a kind of revelation in combining the aesthetics of life with the rigor of science. When you're confronting a question like what can we learn about the extended capacity of consciousness, you really, really need a combination of the aesthetic and the scientific. You have to be rigorous so you don't fool yourself, but you have to be open-minded and generous in order to avoid, in order to prevent yourself from missing, or how they say, the baby in the bathwater.
Right. Right. That we don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. And, you know, Roger, what I'm thinking, too, is that in the 70s, when you were, when you were starting all of this, the whole concept of consciousness was very, very different than it is now. What was that like back then?
Well, it was a kind of uphill battle, in a sense, because we were doing something that was not expected in a conservative university. I mean, Princeton is just like any other major university. It's science in the form of all that we know, not how to do things. So down in the basement of the engineering school where our laboratory, which was called PEAR, was, we were busy doing things. We were trying to expand the ability of science to teach us something, and I think quite successfully. So we wound up we didn't offend anybody, but people took offense anyway that we were there. You know, we were oddballs as far as they were concerned. So we had to, and mostly this was Bob John, who was a remarkable man. He was a consummate scientist, but he also was a very effective political figure, politician in the academic world. So when he got pushed, he was able to push back. And I think basically he was practically invincible, but it cost him a lot of time. And one of the few regrets that I think he had about the whole business of basically putting a stellar career on the line, a major scientist, rocket scientist at that. He put all that on the line in order to do this PEAR lab. And the only thing that I heard him express regret about was that he couldn't get his fingers dirty. He didn't have enough time to actually work in the lab and do the experiments. And so he would have to gather money, for one thing, and fend off people who were actually not true skeptics because they didn't bother to study the literature or the papers or the experiments. They knew this was impossible. But it wasn't impossible, and so we had a good run.
Now, let me just jump in for a second for those that are unaware. Perhaps we can just for a moment, I guess, as we continue on, but talking about global consciousness, which is really ultimately maybe the major gestalt of this whole program at this time. First question is the term global consciousness. Did you come up with that one, you think?
Well, first, I think probably I did, but the first name for the project was the Egg Project, E-G-G. And that was because my son, who was a fabulous programmer, did the original architecture for the software.
Wow.
And ran this project and still runs this project almost 30 years later. In any case, it was his opinion that what we were doing was something like an EEG, but instead of electrode on a scalp, it was random number generators spaced around the Earth, Gaia. So he said, what you're doing is an electrogaiagram, and that, of course, has a natural acronym of EGG, E-G-G. And we still call those devices, those random number generators out in the field, we call them EGGs.
Ah, that's amazing. So you came up with the term, and perhaps you could, for those uninitiated listeners, tell us what the heck you mean by global consciousness.
Yeah, well, I failed to finish the answer to your original question, which was, did I come up with global consciousness? I did, because I was looking for a fiscal sponsor, I could get donations, but I didn't want to form a nonprofit and worry about the taxes and all that. So I asked IONS to take care of the money for me, and they needed a formal name. And so instead of saying Egg Project, which was, a little bit unusual, I said, let's call it the Global Consciousness Project, or GCP. And that's the name it's had ever since. Now there's a GCP 2.0, which we can talk about if you like at some point.
Yeah. So what is IONS?
It's the Institute of Noetic Sciences. It's a place that has, well, it's a membership organization. When I first was working with them on this, they had about 50,000 members. That's a lot of people interested in noetic sciences. It was started by Edgar Mitchell, who was one of the astronauts who actually walked on the moon.
Yes, we actually have done a couple of presentations for them at some point. Marvelous, remarkable work. And so you've got these different random number generators. Can you define that for about a minute or so, just for people who are...
Right. Well, my wife says the easy and necessary simple way of putting it is it's an electric coin flipper, or electronic coin flipper, that operates at high speed and with complete reliable precision.
Nice. And so that I assume that if you flip a coin 100 times, 50 times it's going to be heads, 50 times it's going to be tails. Is that what you're...
on average, yeah. Okay. Sometimes it'll be 51 or 54, sometimes 47. But the average will be very close to 50-50, and that's what a random number generator does. People talk about a bit stream. It produces bits which are either one or a zero, and it produces them with complete unpredictable randomicity. And that's what we need for to have what we think of as a random source that people might interact with and change. So we want in the laboratory experiments, we had people try to make more ones or more zeros on command. And people, it turns out, are able to do that. It's not a big or very reliable effect, but it happens again and again.
Mm. And you know, Roger, in our next section, because we're probably going to go to commercial in just about a minute. So in our next section, I'd really love to delve more deeply into random number generators and let our audience have an understanding of what that is, because,
and what can affect it. That's
yes,
all. What can affect these random number generators?
I mean, because it's fascinating and our audience is very interested in consciousness.
So listen, we're going to go to commercial now. I am Jonathan Goldman.
And I'm Andy Goldman.
And we're talking with our, oh my goodness gracious, esteemed colleague, Dr. Roger Nelson, who is, among other things, the man who manifested first the collective consciousness of the planet through the fabulous Global Consciousness Project. We'll be talking more about that when we get back from commercial.
Stay with us. We will be right back.
Experience the power of vibroacoustic sound therapy with the new vibrotuners from me, Jonathan Goldman. When applied to the body, this set of tuning forks creates deeply resonant harmonic frequencies that bring healthy vibrations to your cells. You'll experience a sonic massage that is soothing and healing. Try the vibrotuners from HealingSounds.com.
Do you want to experience the powerful benefits of sound healing? Read The Humming Effect by Jonathan Goldman and Andy Goldman. Discover how the simplest sounds may be the most profound. Dr. Bruce Lipton has said, it is a powerful non-pharmaceutical prescription for self-healing that has only positive side effects, such as harmony, health, and happiness. You can find The Humming Effect at HealingSounds.com, Amazon.com, or wherever fine books are sold.
Quantum physics tells us that everything is vibration. You are vibration. Ancient wisdom tells us we have seven chakras. These chakras are the vibrational energy centers of our body. They are responsible for our health and wellness. Many times, they are out of balance. When this happens, we lose our health and wellness. Now you can use the power of vibration to put your chakras into balance. You don't need any instruments, nutrients, or anything else but your own voice. Learn to balance your chakras to experience health and wellness. The complete chakra chanting experience at www.healingsounds.com/chakra-chanting. Try it. It'll change your life.
You're listening to CHSR, Real Radio on the Web.
And we are back. I'm Jonathan Goldman.
And I'm Andy Goldman. And we are back with the esteemed Dr. Roger Nelson. And I would like to mention, Roger, your website.
This is a website for the information on the Global Consciousness Project.
And that is global-mind.org. So people can go to that website and get much more information about the Global Consciousness Project. But Roger, before our break, we were talking about random number generators. Mm. And one of the questions that we had is, what actually affects the random number generators?
Right. Most of the random number generators we use nowadays are electronic in nature, and they use a circuit that is basically pushing electrons the wrong way through toward or against diodes or switches. So what happens in, and this is something that you can explain it with quantum mechanics, but not necessarily otherwise. A few electrons pass through the switch. They shouldn't be able to by classical thinking, but a quantum process allows what's called quantum tunneling, and few electrons wind up on the other side of the barrier where we sample them. And if there's they make a very weak current. We sample that, and if it's a little bit over its average, we call it a one. If it's a little under the average voltage, we call it a zero. So that's how most modern random number generators work. A quantum level process that is, because of its quantum nature, completely unpredictable. There's no way that anybody can know whether we'll have a one next or a zero. Not even the machine itself knows. It's just quantum unpredictable. So what can affect it? It turns out that very little, there's almost nothing we know that can change that phenomenon, the electron tunneling. The one thing that we do know from research can affect it is intention or consciousness from human beings, presumably animals and trees as well, but it's easiest for us to experiment with human beings. We can change the number of electrons flowing through that system, or at least we can change the output as if we were changing the number of electrons by thinking about it, by wishing for it.
This sounds a little bit like, and I'm not a quantum physicist, but I think it's called the observer effect, how people looking or measuring something can literally affect the, I mean, those are two different things, actually, I guess I suggested, but somehow, people looking at, what is it, the double slit experiment, and that is affected by a,
yeah. Well, certainly there is a relationship between that double slit kind of experiment, where just the possibility of knowing which slit the photon might go through, just the possibility of knowing it is already enough to affect what actually happens. So that sometimes it flows, sometimes it doesn't. But in a way, the same thing is true for these, for our slight changes in the output of the random number generators. The truth is, I don't think anybody knows exactly what a mechanism might be. In other words, physicists especially are prone to theorizing that it is this or that, but I think we just don't know enough at this point, and I'm disappointed in people who maintain without, thoughtfulness that it has to be this or that.
Mm.
Because we're dealing in an area where people who are philosophically inclined will say consciousness isn't just an afterthought. Consciousness is fundamental. So in some way, you might say that the phenomenon of electron tunneling is a result of consciousness, not something that consciousness is brought to bear upon. It happens because consciousness exists, and you couldn't find a more powerful observer effect than that.
Mm. So getting back on a level to this whole phenomena of the fact that somehow, consciousness seems to affect these random numbers. Is it any particular type of consciousness? I was sort of led to believe that it had to do with something like compassion or something like that.
Well, I think the very basic question of whether it's a particular kind of consciousness is certainly the right question to ask. For example, As you suggest, compassion is very basic in the Global Consciousness Project, because what we're looking at is connection, and a compassion is a connecting emotion. We're not separate creatures. If we are healthy, we're actually joined together at a very fundamental, essentially unconscious level. That's the conclusion that I arrive at anyway. But if we actually do the analysis, we count up all the events that evince or evoke compassion, those will be the set of events producing most reliably the effect that we are looking for, the effect that we're predicting. So in other words, compassion is powerful. We all know in personal experience, it's one of the necessary emotions for real humanity.
I imagine that the gratitude is also up there on the positive list of things that...
Yes, I think that probably would be true. I haven't done an analysis of gratitude. I didn't think about it when I was making up the spreadsheet. But lots of other things, fear and anger and love and various other kinds of passions, we have looked at them. We have counted up what the effect size is given a certain subset of emotion. But
I
didn't think about gratitude as being... at the time.
How does fear, for example, affect or not?
It's a powerful effector also, but not as strong as love, as it turns out.
Great. You know,
love and compassion is, it's kind of a form of love in a way. It's like a more broadcast form of love, I think. And it is... by far the most reliable indicator. If we see an event with a lot of compassion produced, it's very likely that it will see some effect in the data.
Beautiful. Well, and I'm glad to see it's more powerful than fear.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, it's not that fear is powerless. It has its effect. But if you think about compassion and fear as emotions, one of them is drawing people together, and the other is making us run away.
Separation. Hey, Roger, we are going to go into commercial. And then we'll be right back. So I want everyone to stay tuned, because we're talking about one of the most important, from our perspective, phenomena that you can perceive of, which is global consciousness. We're talking about the man who first brought this concept to the planet, at least under that name. And that is Dr. Roger Nelson. I'm Jonathan Goldman.
And I'm Andy Goldman. And we will be right back.
Quantum physics tells us that everything is vibration. You are vibration. Ancient wisdom tells us we have 7 chakras. These chakras are the vibrational energy centers of our body. They are responsible for our health and wellness. Many times, they are out of balance. When this happens, we lose our health and wellness. Now you can use the power of vibration put your chakras into balance. You don't need any instruments, nutrients, or anything else but your own voice. Learn to balance your chakras to experience health and wellness. The complete chakra chanting experience at www.healingsounds.com/chakra-chanting. Try it. It'll change your life.
Do you want to experience the powerful benefits of sound healing? Read The Humming Effect by Jonathan Goldman and Andy Goldman. Discover how the simplest sounds may be the most profound. Dr. Bruce Lipton has said it is a powerful non-pharmaceutical prescription for self-healing that has only positive side effects, such as harmony, health, and happiness. You can find the humming effect at HealingSounds.com, Amazon.com, or wherever fine books are sold.
Do you want to experience the powerful benefits of connecting with the energy of the earth? Would you like to be able to tune your mind and your body to this extraordinary healing frequency? Try the Gaia Frequency Tuning Forks, available at HealingSounds.com and at Amazon. Exclusively designed by me, Jonathan Goldman, these tuning forks might just change your life.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net. Millions of listeners know the secret. Now you do too. Positive talk 24 hours a day, every day.
Hi, and we're back. I'm Jonathan Goldman.
And I'm Andy Goldman. We are here with Dr. Roger Nelson. We have been talking about the Global Consciousness Project, Roger, and consciousness. And there is so much that is involved with that. And we're talking about the emotionality that affects the random number generator. Could you talk a little bit more about that connection between emotion and how that is tracked through the Global Consciousness Project?
Yes, the Global Consciousness, if I may just assume there is such a thing, is not really very different from human consciousness, and except in some dimensions. For example, an event in global consciousness is hours. An event in human consciousness is milliseconds. You know, a tenth of a second or something. But in terms of emotions, I think we did research using categorization to find out what affects the random number generators in our network. And it turns out that there are a few emotions that stand out. You'll not be surprised to know that among them is love, or compassion. I think compassion is the emotion that is most reliable as a predictor of an effect on the global conscious network. So if we select an event in the world that really evokes tremendous amounts of compassion or really represents compassion, we can be fairly sure that we'll see an effect in this, our low signal to noise data. We'll see an effect of in response to the compassion that many, many, many people are sharing across the world. I'm not surprised by that. We shouldn't any of us be surprised, because compassion is an emotion that connects us, and that is what we're talking about in terms of the global consciousness. It's a matter of connections in the same way that a thought is a matter of connections among our neurons. A global event that's full of compassion will be a kind of event that's connecting very large numbers of us in a heartfelt relationship to each other, a kind of love. So there are other emotions. People wonder, what about fear? What about anger and so forth? And what we found is that the valence, the positive, negative kind of difference, isn't as powerful as we might like, but the positive emotions do produce more reliably the kind of effects that we are looking for in the global conscious network.
And this is so encouraging, Roger, because right now on our planet, we really are all looking for those positive emotions that can keep us connected rather than disconnected. So, yeah. You know, hearing this is very heartwarming.
It's brilliant. I just wanted to, I'm looking at my notes, and from your book, Connected Emergence of Global Consciousness and all that stuff, You've been tracking different events for quite a long time. And one of the most interesting is, I guess, 9/11, because you had some, if you like, really interesting, I don't want to know if you want to call them anomalies or whatnot, but it seems that there was some sort of registration that occurred before the actual event.
Yes, 9/11 was such a big event that we spent a tremendous amount, several of us and my peer group, doing analysis and using different techniques and looking at it from different angles. So one of the earliest things we discovered was a suggestion that if the reaction of the network began early, it began, and then we did some, used a statistic that showed very precisely when a change took place. It was about 4 a.m. when the actual first airplane hit at something like 8:45. Mm-hmm. So several hours before the first plane hit, the very big changes began in the network. Probably one other thing that's just, to me, profoundly important and sort of in line with what I think most of us feel about that event, 9/11, was that the interaction not only started early, but they persisted for a total of about 3 days. So most of our events are a few hours long. But in this case, the global consciousness, if you will, stayed focused and stayed empathetic and to this, happening in the world for a very long time. Mostly we are like, what's the term? ADHD. The consciousness is really kind of, unable to stay focused for very long, but in this case we did.
It was huge, yes, and it sort of suggests, I'm just going to use that as a term, suggests that there was something going on in the field that occurred before the actual event, and that is a monumental concept.
Well, the way I think of it is, yeah, I agree, it is a monumental concept. And it's also one of the things that leads me to think that we can best understand the effects in terms of some kind of field of consciousness. But that's true, I think, of individual human consciousness. It's a field that isn't stuck inside your head. It extends out into the world, interacts with other consciousnesses. In any case, the field that humans focused on the same thing and feeling the same emotions in synchrony, that field is so powerful in its presence in the universe that it can actually change the behavior of a rather abstract device, a random number generator, make it less random. So in a sense, what a field is a structure. And in 9/11 produced a structure that was present in the world for a long time and became eventually a kind of driver of change in the random number generators. The structure in the human consciousness was imparted to these abstract devices.
Beautiful. Andy? We're going to take a break in the not-too-distant future, but I want to first tell people a little bit, if you want to find out more about the Global Consciousness Project, I would just say, suggest that you Google it, because there's a ton of information on there. And specifically, you go to global-mind.org is one, and also on information on the second level of the Global Consciousness Project, which we're going to talk about in a minute, the GCP2.net. So that is ways. And also, Roger's got a book called Connected, Emergence of Global Consciousness, Dr. Roger Nelson. And it's a really good, really interesting book that combines all sorts of stuff, including, if you know, the quantum physics phenomena of what you've been talking about. So it's just extraordinary work. And I want to thank you as we go into commercial for just being who you are.
Thank you. Yeah.
And I will ditto that, because we are grateful that you're sharing your wisdom with us today, Roger. And, you know, and it's so exciting, because what we're really hearing is that as human beings, we have got a lot of power with our thoughts.
Oh, yes, we have an immense power, and I think also responsibility. It's easy to forget that. But if we work together, we can totally subvert the system, so to speak, or we can create a future that's bright if we work together. And I think we have the responsibility, not only the capability, but the responsibility to do that.
Great. We're going commercial now. Thank you.
We'll be right back.
Experience the power of vibroacoustic sound therapy with the new vibro-tuners from me, Jonathan Goldman. When applied to the body, this set of tuning forks creates deeply resonant harmonic frequencies that bring healthy vibrations to your cells. You'll experience a sonic massage that is soothing and healing. Try the vibro-tuners from HealingSounds.com.
Do you want to experience the powerful benefits of sound healing? Read The Humming Effect by Jonathan Goldman and Andy Goldman. Discover how the simplest sounds may be the most profound. Dr. Bruce Lipton has said, "It is a powerful non-pharmaceutical prescription for self-healing that has only positive side effects, such as harmony, health, and happiness." You can find The Humming Effect at HealingSounds.com, Amazon.com, or wherever fine books are sold.
Hello, this is Jonathan Goldman. I'd like to bring you a few moments of relaxation by offering you this opportunity to listen to some of my music. This is an excerpt of Quiet Space from Celestial Reiki. If you can, just close your eyes and take a nice deep breath as you listen to this music. If you'd like to hear more of my music, please go to Spotify, Amazon Music, Pandora, Apple Music, YouTube, or anywhere else you stream music. Thank you.
Music, information, and friends. HealthyLife.net.
And we are back. I'm Jonathan Goldman.
I'm Andy Goldman.
And we are with our esteemed colleague, Dr. Roger Nelson, the, if you like, founder of the Global Consciousness Project. We're talking about global consciousness. What a concept. Andy, you probably had a question first and foremost.
Well, Jonathan, the question that I had was, with the Global Consciousness Project, you know, we're talking about the power that the human mind really has to affect change and that responsibility. And, Roger, I guess my question is, how did that whole emotionality, how did the scientific segue into, hey, the emotions are really affecting this on a scientific level?
Well, when we love each other, we are connected, and we're connected at a deep level that we don't even pay attention to, partly because it's so hard to look at your unconscious motivations and activations. So I think about the Global Consciousness Project as giving us evidences, or at least suggesting, a kind of model of the universe in which we are all connected. But the connection isn't something we can easily see. It's deep down. It's very powerful. But we don't have access to it most of the time. Once in a while, something will come along that says, oh my goodness, that was such a rich encounter because I feel the connection. What I think is probably the most important thing we could do as human beings who are part of a global consciousness is to try to bring the unconscious connections that we all share up into awareness, into consciousness, so that we become consciously connected in addition to being unconsciously connected. Not an easy task because we're not used to bringing our unconscious emotions and proclivities into awareness, but it's important. It's the sort of thing, it's like interpreting a dream. We'll never know anything about it unless we give it a whirl.
Beautiful. Roger, I know that Global Consciousness Project has gone into some, shall we say, evolution. And that Dr. Roland McCready, who was our guest last month, actually has taken over with his esteemed team. Anything you'd like to say about the Global Consciousness Project 2?
Oh, yes. I'm very grateful to Roland and the whole team who are putting GCP 2 or GCP 2.0, as we often say, in motion. It's already well along. It's well developed, already has a pretty big network, bigger than the original Global Consciousness Project ever was. There's a lot of effort to figure out what's the best kind of analysis to do and what are the best tests of our hypothesis that there is a global consciousness and that we can tap into it and maybe even reinforce it, maybe bring it more richly into being. In any case, Roland, is an old friend from many, many years, and he and his group have been running something called the Global Coherence Initiative for a long time. And he was such a natural person for me to think about heading a project to bring to evolve GCP into GCP2. And I'm, as I said, extremely grateful that he and the team, I'm part of the team, I'm happy to say. And I love being in the meetings because these are all people who have the same kind of feeling. Yeah. Of connectedness as a kind of reality that we don't know enough about and that we are now in the process of learning more about every day.
Love it. We've got in 2 days the 23rd annual World Sound Healing Day, and as part of that, and this is so interesting, we are holding an event that we're calling the Guided Unified Heart Activation that's actually occurring specifically in a 15-minute time period from 11:55 a.m. New York time to about 12:10 p.m. So it's a 15-minute thing on that February 14th to see, and it's going to be tracked by the Global Consciousness Project to see if this large event can somehow shift the charts. That's going to be so interesting.
And we'll look forward to what the GCP2 network shows for that.
Yeah, it's such an interesting thing because this is the 23rd year, and you've tracked the event a number of times. And some years it really spikes, and some years not as much. But it's just so interesting, just even the concept that people are more and more, they're so interested now in taking part in an event that possibly could be charted by this thing. I mean, how crazy is that?
Well, I love hearing you talk about that because it's I'm an optimist, but congenitally. And on the other hand, watching the news is a little disconcerting for even an optimist, right?
Amen.
What gives me great optimism is that I find and I encounter, I think, more people all the time, more groups who are focused on a brighter future, and that is desperately needed. The more of us who have that intention and that hope and that dream, the better. Because when we come together, we become a powerful force.
We like to say we heal the planet.
We heal ourselves.
We heal ourselves.
And we then heal the planet. So it really is that deep connection. And Roger, we're looking so forward to our global unified heart activation, because we're going to be adding sound to that, which is in itself, when it's, you know, the intention is held of love and compassion, is very connecting. And so that's what this whole program is about, really.
And it's so interesting, just in terms of the science. This year we've created this very, very interesting, if you like, recording that creates also heart-brain coherence and all sorts of psychoacoustic effects, so that literally people listening to it will experience the Schumann resonance and other frequencies. So, and then we did a test run of it. It was really powerful. So I can't wait. And I'll send you a link to it so you can.
Oh, great. Yeah. Many years ago, you sent me a CD of the Ultimate Ohm.
Yes.
And I actually put an excerpt with your permission of that on the Global Consciousness Project website, so that people could actually hear what it might be like if we played the random stuff that had become not random. As music.
Yes. Brilliant. All right, listen, we could go on for hours, because you are not only so fascinating and inspiring, but so much fun to talk to. We gotta draw it, shall we say, to a conclusion at this point in time and space. But Roger, it has been a blessing to have you with us.
Roger, thank you. We are honored, and it has been a joy to spend this time together. So thank you for sharing your life with us today.
You're most welcome. I'm grateful that you guys are there and pulling these kinds of things together. This is just wonderful for humanity. And I have a little incident, I mean, an anecdote I'd like to tell you outside the frame, if need be, or inside either. The very first pilot program I did to see whether a global consciousness kind of project might make sense, I didn't even know to think of it that way at the time, but I met some people at Esalen who were proselytizing a Gaia Mind meditation in which they were going to ask as many people as could be contacted to please meditate for 5 minutes at noon on January 23rd, 1997. It sounds so much like the planned gathering of loving forces that you guys are working on for the 14th.
Thank you, Roger.
Once again, we stand on the shoulders of giants, and what a blessing. All right, so listen, we'll be back in a minute, folks. I'll tell you who's coming on next month. And Dr. Roger Nelson, author of Connected, Emergence of the Global Consciousness, thank you so much for being our guest.
And thank you both.
Thank you.
Music, information, and friends. HealthyLife.net.
Oh, my goodness gracious, what an extraordinary
fabulous.
Yes, Dr. Roger Nelson. What a we are grateful to have his presence grace this planet. What a blessing. All right, well, next month, folks, we have a dear friend, student, and sound healer from Britain going to be our guest, Jason Stillwell. And so please tune in. It's going to be March 12th, and Jason is doing some really extraordinary work that he will be telling you about. Until then, keep lots of love and light through sound in your life. This is Jonathan Goldman saying, see you next month. And don't forget World Sound Healing Day. Bye-bye.